I'm Kyle Harmer.
And I'm Sarah Harmer.
And you are listening to our Tub Talk,
a conversational podcast brought to you from the comfort of our hot tub.
Hi.
It's hot. It's hot.
It is warm, indeed.
Yeah. Now it feels good. Let me turn my watch on water mode.
Happy Sunday.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, we'll have to watch the time. I don't want to have this on my head more than 35 minutes.
Oh, I don't think we'll make it 35 because we've proven that more recently we start to get sweaty and
yep.
we can't sit here and just blab.
And stew.
And stew. Well, on that note, hello, friends.
Hello.
Welcome back again.
We're back.
Mm-hmm. We promise.
Yeah.
You can't get rid of us.
Although this week will be kind of a weird schedule because we'll be out of town, but I think we should try to find a way to record a Tub Talk this weekend.
I was planning to unplug these and bring them with me just to see. No. And I would imagine, so I'm, again, we're still getting back in the swing of things with this. So I'm trying to put these on Wednesdays is going to be my plan. So we could still theoretically, this is Sunday now, so we could probably fit in another episode ourselves.
Okay.
But I'm planning to take the mics with us, so we're going to North Carolina to visit Gideon. Gideon already knows this. I'm curious as to whether he'll actually listen to this on Wednesday with all that's going on or not, but we'll see. And if he's game, then we can do it.
Yeah. It'd be really great if we could.
It's not about that, though.
No, it's not. It's about being with him, so, and whatever, you know, he needs. So, but I can imagine a podcast would be kind of cool to do.
It's been an interesting week to just
think
about mortality.
I haven't been thinking about mortality, but
you haven't been Barbie? You haven't been, so do you think about death?
What are your thoughts on death? Do you have thoughts of
dying or something like that?
Yeah, something. I don't remember what her exact line was, but no, I haven't really been thinking about mortality. More or less just thinking about the fragility of life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's more what it is because, like, go on. I don't want to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Because these are two people who we've had a relationship with for a very long time and a very close relationship with for a very long time. And, I mean, Janelle and I've known her since, well, Kim and I, her older sister, Kim and I were in kindergarten together.
Yeah.
And became good friends since we were really, really little. And I would always love going to her house because it just felt so loving.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember even the sibling dynamic wasn't chaotic.
No.
Oddly
enough, for a family that had three girls, two boys, the boys being the eldest and the youngest, and then the girls in between.
If I'm honest, if I think about the majority of family dynamics around me, mine was the odd one out.
In terms of, like, just the chaos
that
you're dealing with.
Dynamics of family.
To
the extreme that it was.
Okay, yeah, to that extreme.
I'm not saying that there was none.
They always felt to me the exception also, though, to the rule of, like, just general, like, in the same sense that I think our girls and our family is an exception. Like, that our kids, by and large, get along.
Yeah.
By and large, maybe you guys didn't get along to an extreme, but and that might make you an outlier in that, but I'd say the Hoeflinger family was an outlier in how well they got along.
Right,
because
on
most
the opposite
people
side of
most people there is some level of you know, disconnect, discomfort, chaos, yeah. and all of that. And I saw little of that from them.
Yeah.
They were just always pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And Mrs. Hoflinger always made it a very warm environment to be in. Mr. Hoflinger was always the dad, like the standard GM working dad. I've always felt like
yeah.
he had a great involvement with his kids. But he was definitely a family guy, but I don't know. I think about the lives that the people that we've just recently lost, what their lives were like. And Mr. O'Daniel has a slightly different story than Janelle, I would say. But
he was more typical.
Yes.
Of what you would expect to be at a funeral. Like,
agreed.
You know, he wasn't old, but he wasn't young.
Right.
He lived an on and off hard life occasionally.
Right.
And had health issues.
Right.
So Janelle's more the one that it's like, oh, this is someone our age and younger.
Yeah.
Who also even like, it, that's a big family. Reading the obit, like, she's only had 2 out of 4 grandparents so far go.
Yeah.
And an uncle.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that is... Again, it and highlights the fragility. And wasn't the uncle, like,
a freak accident?
I believe you're right, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it was not from illness. He was traveling. He was doing yeah. some sort of, like, sightseeing or photography or...
Yeah, I think you're right.
...film crew of some sort, and he, like, fell. He had, like, a major fall or yes, something.
Yep, that rings a bell now.
So, her family, they're born to survive. They're just good, and they're good people, like... When you think about what you want in your life that would help decrease the chances of going early,
mm-hmm.
I think about Janelle. I think about her family. They are just good people, and they live their lives as good people. They have their differences, and I don't agree. We don't align with everything to the same degree, but you would never know it based on the relationship that they have with us. I mean... Janelle's mom reaches out to me on occasion just to make sure I'm doing okay.
Well, up until her getting sick, you were still doing her hair.
Yeah. I still did her hair while she was sick.
That's true. And you still do her sister's hair occasionally.
Yeah.
Not as often maybe in the last year or two. I do her niece's
hair
but
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. But you used the word that comes to my mind too, which is like, is fragility, because I don't know, for myself, I've always felt like I have a healthy understanding and respect for mortality. Like,
I think you got a little bit of a black heart, but whatever.
Well, that might be true, but I mourn, you know, I haven't had much personal loss.
You've lost almost all of your grandparents.
Yeah, but I didn't have some sort of relationship on a level that it changed my life.
Okay.
So I feel like my relationship with that was healthy.
Okay. That's fair.
It didn't not affect me. But it also... I feel, and I could be biased because it's me talking about myself, but I feel that my level of reaction was entirely what is normal. And this is coming from me, who I will admit my brain has a hard, sees most, not most, but a decent amount of people's level of mourning as much. Because it, like, death is normal. It is part of the human experience. It is something we all share in common.
But people aren't mourning the death of somebody that they're dead. They're mourning the fact that they no longer have them in their lives.
Yes, I get
and
that.
And so if you're coming from the perspective that you haven't lost anybody that has a close enough relationship to you where it affects your life, then I think that your view of death is very simplified, because it's not drenched in emotions. It's just logical. You get old, you die. You get sick, you die.
Yeah.
For you, it's not personal.
Well, but it still is. I mean, that's how, like, I might not have had a personal relationship much with Janelle in more recent years. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you like, it hit me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I guess I process and then I move along.
Right.
I see a lot of versions of grief as not moving along. And I try not to be, I try not to dwell on that because it's not my journey. It's someone else's.
Right.
But I don't generally do that, partially because I haven't experienced maybe that version of it myself, but also partially because I don't see, I see it being a detriment to someone because at that point they're not living their life.
I would say that there have been people in our lives who have not had healthy mourning. Mm-hmm. Because they don't already process their emotions healthily enough.
Yeah, and then at that point it's...
But it's not... But I don't think that has anything to do with the mourning process. I think we just watch people that are going through a mourning process who also don't have... Who don't have safe and healthy, like, tools to process regular emotions.
Again, and that's why I don't... Because it's their journey. So I'm not going to judge too much. But I would encourage that... And I know I've heard this, actually, at funerals, is that... Ron's would be a great example, is that, you know, when we lose people that mean a lot to us, they certainly want us to be able to stop and celebrate their life.
Yeah.
And certainly grieve, but they don't want us to live in a state of that. They want us, because then we're not living our life.
But then you also have somebody who's trying to dictate your emotions. And if... And I just think each person should be able to live their own journey.
I agree. It's triggering to...
Yeah.
Start to get into the depths of that. But that's where I come from. Like, I'm not cold. I could understand how someone... No, I'm not. Maybe a little.
Okay. I just... Again, I think it's going to take a specific person in your life that you lose, mm-hmm. to trigger the same kind of emotions that you see from other people who have a lengthy, unhealthy
process. I made a comment to you within this last week about if you go at some point and I would turn into yeah. one of two things. Did I say that on a recording? And
no,
if not,
you said
can
it
I
in
repeat
our,
it?
Yes, you said so it in said, our room when you were sitting on our bed.
I don't remember the exact context of the conversation, but I said that most certainly what would happen to me, uh-huh. if I lost you as a spouse, especially in, like, if it's past 60, I don't know. At that point, it doesn't, like, the sexual experience doesn't, I don't know. It doesn't. It's a thing, certainly. But
it's not a larger exactly. piece of a pie.
If it was to happen in the next 20 years, okay. let's say,
well, that's
what
how
I
math
said,
works.
What I said, shut up. What I said was that I could see me either turning into like the confirmed hermit bachelor,
right.
or a man whore.
Use the word slut.
I might have said slut. Yeah, I could.
And I thought that was fantastic. And I said for you, I hope that you turn into. Like a hungry slut or starving slut was like what you said. It was some sort of adjective that made it like active in its performance.
Title of this episode is definitely Kyle's a little bit of a slut, question mark.
Yeah, is Kyle a slut? Or will Kyle
I
be
just,
a slut?
But
there are so many things that you and I didn't experience before we were married, and I don't... And we are very limited in our knowledge of things that we experience in our marriage. What are you pointing at? Oh,
cat.
Oliver,
I'm just
he's
catting.
So cute.
There's a cat looking at me. He turned around.
I'm literally talking about sex.
I know,
and
you're
focused on a cat. Boy, oh boy.
Hi, I love you.
All right, so the first question we have, huh? The ring?
Yeah, where'd that come from? I don't know. Anyway,
you and
sorry.
I were in Chicago when I got it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
For our anniversary, I got it at Navy Pier.
I switched from the rubber ones back to...
Nice.
They...
I need to replace this one because this one's very, very dinky. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Brain. Okay. ADD. ADHD.
Oh, I like this one better.
Rabbit.
So let's go ahead and start. Well, it's a kind of a really special episode just in nature.
I was just saying, we might not do all three. We might do one or two, especially since they start.
It's only based on my head. What's it looking like?
Well, I don't know.
What There's color is it?
Blue-green for the
Is it yellow top? Yet?
The top?
Yeah.
No.
Is the back yellow yet?
no. I still see lots of dark and lots of blue green. Time.
Okay. Did you have a secret hiding place when you were a kid?
Secret hiding place?
Or a hiding place. Like,
yeah, yeah. I'm trying to... So I'm going to do the Kyle thing and, like, give multiple answers. Because just if, like, if I enter... Me, personally, just Kyle? No. I never had it. But I never was really solitary. Like, between friends and, like, brother. Like, I never really hid on my own. As kids, we certainly had, like, hiding places that we felt, like, forts that we made and stuff. I don't know that they'd... Like, I get, like, the context of this would be, like, the stereotypical, like, you know, kid has, like, hidden place in the attic that they like to go to get away from family and parents and all of that. And no, the answer to that, like, that interpretation is I didn't ever have that. But we certainly as, like, prior to having friends that we always hung out with on a daily basis, like, me and my brother got along on the level that we always played.
Yeah.
And we certainly had places that we felt were hiding places that we would just, like, you know, like, well, attic in the garage in Ohio that we would, like, it was, like, our place that we'd go hide until we broke the garage door.
And whoops.
We didn't hang out there as much because Dad not happy. also, definitely taking, like, spray paint cans and killing wasps up there with it, and then Dad pointing out that we were just, like, covering the walls with spray paint.
Whoops.
We were graffitiing without the purpose being graffitiing. But I never had anything that was solitary. I don't know. I grew up young enough that me and Craig got along and we just did those things together. And then as we got older, friends got roped into it and we had forts in the woods that we felt were our hiding places to get away from people. And we'd make bonfires in them and shoot bottle rockets at each other and other dumb kid stuff.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that I had, like, that, like, place where I went and hid and read, but I didn't.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't have any place that I would hide. I had places where I knew were blind spots to my parents.
That's rich.
There are blind spots, but not necessarily a place that I was hiding.
I certainly remember you pulling me to those ones to kiss me.
Oh, yeah.
And I was very uncomfortable at the time because I was...
Yeah, a student.
Sure, it was that when I was a student, and it wasn't that I was a shy, unkissed teenager.
Oh.
That wanted to, and also was like, but your parents are right there! You're like, let me show you the mound that is my garden in the backyard.
And hey, innocent, that mound was legit.
Innocent Kyle thinks she just wants me to see the garden. Nope, she wanted to kiss me.
I did.
I was irresistible.
You were.
I had no clue that I was.
You didn't.
I denied it. I didn't understand it.
You didn't.
This is the version of Kyle that adequately says he would eventually turn into either a hermit or a slut.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, no hiding spot for you. That's true. You didn't have a lot of options, honestly.
No.
No, I mean, for a long time, neither did I, other than the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's why it was always like a communal thing.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one, I think, because it's kind of morphed for us.
Okay.
What are your personal space boundaries?
I don't have much personal space boundaries. I really don't. With all of my doctor's visits, I kind of have to be comfortable in my own skin and comfortable with people being in my personal space. And as our kids have gotten older, they have wanted to be in my personal space more, and I treasure that. I think it's really precious because I was told it wouldn't exist that way. Like, oh, well, just be grateful your kids still give you affection because one day they won't. Well, now it's like, I literally can't. Like, on rare occasions, I'll say, you know, 10 months inside my body wasn't enough of personal contact that you have to now be like, you're like, your arm is in my shirt. Like, why are you? But it really is cute for me. And then for you and I think you and I have become more comfortable with each other and being able to have conversations. So we...
Like, I shouldn't just immediately start groping you. And I appreciate that. You can't see it. She's got her face palm.
It's a face palm.
No, but it's like, because
I saw a reel the other day, and it might have been yesterday, but it was like, it was like a wife saying, "I want you to do these certain things," and then it would show another clip. So like the first one was, "I'd like you to do the house chores," and then like the next, like help with the house chores, and like the next video is this guy with the leaf blower in the house blowing all the kids' clothes across the room, and then like the next one is like, "I want you to be more romantic," and then it's literally two apes, and the one leans over and just starts like yanking on the one's nipple. And I just had to chuckle because you really are learning, like, we are learning how to balance being sexually active and being physically affectionate. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge difference between the two, and they don't mean the same thing. They don't lead to the same thing. And I think it's something that you and I are working on becoming more comfortable with each other so that we can have more contact.
Yeah.
We're just trying to define what that looks like.
You know, both the things that you've mentioned with the kids and that with that is the sort of thing that came to my mind, because I love that they are embracing and understanding personal boundaries as kids, and the fact that like they have autonomy even with people like relatives to say like, "I don't want a hug."
Yeah.
And I love that for them, because that's not the sort of culture that we certainly had.
No.
And that's not a knock necessarily against our parents. It was
a cultural norm.
It was a cultural norm. Like, this is one of those things that's, it doesn't matter really whether you're talking about like the church or the world at large. Like,
no,
it was just like grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle wanted to pinch your cheeks or give you a hug, and you
churches you had even have to. Forced greet time.
Yeah. Well, so it may be a little worse in that sense, but like it's only been in the last decade that the idea, especially for kids, that like
they don't have to give a hug to grandma.
Like, it's not healthy for them to be required to do that,
right,
has become more the norm and more embraced. So I love both that our kids see that, but that also means even more,
right,
that when they want to be with us,
it means so much more.
Exactly. Like, it is not coercion.
No.
It is purely that sometimes that's what they want. It's coercion for us.
Yep.
Less so for them,
yeah,
honestly. So I love that. And again, like, even the inbuilt things that, like, I wasn't certainly in any way taught, but just learned through the environments we were in on how, like, we interact is things that, like, I have to combat all the time. I mean, we've talked about it. And then I have to, like, balance the fact of, like, all right, it's an overcorrection too much if I'm, like, expecting you to be sexually pursuant of me only so that I'm not crossing a line. Because then it might just never happen, and we're both like, 2 months later, we're like, this pent up frustration. So like, that's
been a long time since we've had a 2 month spell.
Yeah, that wasn't the story for years of our relationship.
Yeah,
but those weren't those weren't times that I had a healthy perspective of it.
So I learned this because I remember the doctor saying it to me.
I don't think that blue or green is ever going to change the color. So just FYI, as I'm looking at it, I don't think that's ever going to fade off.
There's also brown.
And that's hard to see because it's just dark.
Guys, I'm bleaching my hair. I don't know if that was already mentioned.
Oh, they didn't think we were talking about your mustache? That was horrible of me. I'm sorry. Okay. And there's that moment in the episode where it went off the rails.
Mustache.
We've talked about sluts and sex and death, and there's the comment.
No, so what I was going to say is I thought the doctor was just making a joke to me, but I realized that this is just common practice, and it really does make me angry. When I had Macy and she was not a C-section delivery, the doctor made a joke that he was going to stitch me up tighter than a virgin.
That's problematic.
But we weren't able to engage in sex for 6 months after we had Macy because of how tight the doctor stitched me up.
I remember you calling me in pain and frustration and fear and every emotion under the sun using the bathroom at home because you just the experience was...
It was so traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Screw you, Dr. Dead Hands. Right?
That was Dr. Dead.
Nope, we'll just leave it at that. We don't need to out him.
No, I'm just trying to remember his last
name. He might be dead for now.
He's on a yacht. Oh, I have the last question.
I can picture him, but I...
Ugh, I didn't like his hands. I love Dr. Newbeck. Dr. Newbeck was my doctor. He was Dr. Blueberry, and he always
And Moreno was great, too.
Moreno was... Well, that was with Zoe.
Yeah, I know.
I would have loved Dr. Moreno for both deliveries. I think my outcome would have been very, very different. Have you ever felt abandoned?
See, this is where, like, my brain started to say no, and then it started to think it through, and then it started to get emotional. I want... My first gut instinct was no. Stepping away from the mic to wipe my eyes, because sweaty. And then I realized that's because I interpreted it and first went with, like, I don't know, as a kid, or, like, in our relationship, or anything like that, as a young adult. The journey of the last couple years of us leaving the faith traditions of our past has often felt like abandonment. Mm-hmm. And I say that with a grain of salt because I know leaving was a choice of ours. Mm-hmm. And, with all relationships, like it is a two-way street. Like if you're not putting in some effort, you can't expect to necessarily get it back. Mm-hmm. But I know there was a while that we tried to still treat our circles like normal, as normal as we could, knowing that again this is also coupled with like a pandemic,
yeah,
and like a massive sweep across the nation of social changes that really added dividing lines.
Yeah.
But all of that led us to a place that I felt very clear in who we were, and I felt like none of it certainly was a massive change for me. It was certainly just me being able to be open with who I had always been, mm-hmm. which I'd never been able to do. And then that led to basically a decimation of our social circles.
Yeah.
And again, I say that knowing that there's a large amount of responsibility on myself. And when I say that, I'm going to say specifically for me, because we are two different people. And I know that I certainly have tendencies to be much less communicative with people. Mm-hmm. And that's an area that I constantly need to work on. So a large amount of that is on me, but nonetheless, like answering the question, yes.
Yeah.
The last couple of years have felt like long periods of abandonment.
Yeah, I think we were living in a very fake bubble.
Yeah, I've said that before.
That we wholeheartedly believed that we were building our future relationships, and they were not based off of the location of where we lived, and they were not based off of where we gathered on a Sunday morning. We were wholeheartedly believing that we had the free will to leave a church and still be able to maintain relationships and all that.
And I'll say that I think that is, again, that's a little bit of a naivety on our part, because I think regardless where we would have been at that point, when we did leave, the result would have been the same.
Right.
It wouldn't have been, so that's not a direct knock against our last place of worship.
No, it's a knock against all of them.
Yes, exactly.
Because the idea that you can have a relationship with somebody outside of the church is completely false. That is a bold-faced lie people in the church cannot say that they can have.
I agree. I will say that we have met or connected to a small extent with some people from those areas that I think we could. You know, specifically there are, I don't want to give away too much depending on who listens and how much I'm putting people on blast, but like there's one time a year that we get to go to a certain place and see some people that we don't see other times. I whispered. And there are people there that I feel like we could have a vast gulf in difference and it still be okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like, unfortunately, we connected on that level with them too late for it to be that right now. Like, I have a hard time creating that relationship when I still, like, there is a trauma built in with that knowing, it's not even knowing that that's our connection or that's where it was, but it's something intrinsic in that I can't even put really words to that does still have a guard up of mine. And part of that is because we didn't have that connection prior to leaving. It was kind of more after.
Yeah.
And so I just have this, I will admit, it's like I, for myself, have a guard up that I can appreciate the conversations and the connection, and I have a hard time making myself go beyond that to make it something more. And part of it, too, is that I know they still do have a deep connection to that. And so I'm conflicted with it. But there are small pockets of people. For myself personally, some of them have been people that I've never met, and it's just the internet at large. Mm-hmm. And I will forever be grateful for that, because it's, you know, kept me in a space that I can comfortably say I'm agnostic and I'm not something fully saying that there's not anything. And it's because of people that I see that still are part of the faith, and I don't know how they are.
Yeah.
They amaze me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't actually answer the question, but was it?
So I would say that I felt abandoned, period. not as much recently, like in our relationship. Yeah. But you know, as a kid, I had to watch my parents navigate their relationship that didn't really include me. And there were pockets where we were a family, but otherwise I was pretty much on my own. You know, and you and I kind of touched on this the other night when Steven and his friend dropped by that he is the favored child.
I don't know how in the world it was that he kind of just had like this befuddled.
How? What do you mean?
How do you not? And there were so many things that I wanted to mention and I didn't, and I certainly won't on this podcast, but I was like, and some of it too comes from like life perspective that he hasn't had because he lived on the West Coast for a decade?
Yeah.
So like some of the comparisons that immediately are top of mind to me. Because my experience with you and your family is obviously much more post high school, but which gives me the credit to say, I think your position in saying that is true holistically pretty much up to this day.
Yeah.
And I don't ever feel comfortable being able to really even comment on that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave it at that. Go on. But you're not crazy or like you're, it's not a perspective, I almost said you're incorrect. That's not what I meant to say. That you are, there's nothing incorrect about what you're observing there from an outsider insider's perspective.
And then, you know, moving into our more recent history where I began to question everything was because of my feeling of abandonment.
Spiritually. Yeah.
Like, how can I be singing these words about somebody who isn't showing this goodness to me? Whoa.
Sorry, that was the demons in me.
You're listening to all the Taylor Swift.
My black heart. Yes.
Because I sent in the family chat. I was like, don't you guys see
the Taylor Swift? It's not the hardcore band that I watched Monday, whose next album is definitely about religious trauma, and they have a glowing cross that was like the thing illuminated, and their like lead single is titled Blinding Faith.
Sure. I don't have any knowledge of this. All I know is that I sent you and the family a meme of some politician talking about.
And I showed girls the videos of the mosh pit on Monday, and they were like, what?
Yeah. You know, and, like, I don't believe that God is good because he took Janelle.
You know, I don't know how much I want to get into this on recording or not, but here, no.
But it's kind of a way, like, to tie in how we started,
this was something that started to coalesce in my brain the other day that I wanted to, I don't know, discuss with you that I thought you'd find. It's so like amongst dozens, hundreds of issues with religion or the Western church. Mm-hmm. One of the things that really coalesced that I know has always been in my brain, but was really thinking of in this week. And again, like, I don't want to, like, these are my opinions and I don't want to be insulting to people's perspective, especially in the sense of loss. But the thing that I thought about, like, two common gatherings that people have: weddings and funerals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it occurred to me that from the Christian perspective, how often those are like purely centered on the religion. Mm-hmm. And the couple or the person is a footnote or a portion of that story, but it is not meant to be the main portion.
Correct.
And it just really hit me that, like, man, like, because, you know, on dwelling the ideas of, like, where you fit into this story or what you think about it, you know, and the criticism of, like, the church as we see it versus maybe what it's supposed to be, which the progressive church would push for. And for a long time, I wanted to believe, but I was in circles that weren't that. And then once I finally embraced it, I ended up on the outside entirely, having a hard time actually saying that I was part of the progressive church, even though they were something I appreciated. And the idea of these times where you're celebrating people coming together or celebrating someone's life and making it, as much as you might try and, like, hide the actual words of it, like, when you make it not about them first and foremost, and you're like, they are, like, part of the story, but they're not the main portion, just seems so insulting.
Yeah.
And, like, and if I, so let's, if I was committed and still in this, I struggle to see why someone would want a God that wants that.
Yeah.
That wants, when you're celebrating someone's life or celebrating someone's union, if you're bringing the faith into it too, I would think that it boggles my mind to think of a God that would want it to be first about them and not about that.
Yeah.
Like that doesn't sound appealing. And it doesn't sound, now down the road, it doesn't sound reassuring at all. I don't want to dive a ton more into that, but that just it.
Yeah.
In thinking where all the people around us are and where we are, and just really thinking about those two times that are often, like, it's a time that people, regardless of their viewpoints, are going to gather.
Yeah.
Like, we will gather on both sides. People that have no faith are going to somehow end up in something resembling a church on wedding or deathbed. And the main difference being who that day is made about is a lot of that difference. And it just breaks my heart for it not to truly be a celebration of the person that you lost.
Yeah.
And for it to be they being a tool to push an agenda. And I've gone off on religion far more on this episode than I have.
Yes, you have.
Ever.
I'm proud of you.
Aye.
What's our time at?
I don't know. 30? 41 minutes.
Time to wash my hair.
This was far longer of an episode than I thought it was going to be. I was thinking 20 minutes.
Wow.
All right. Thanks, friends.
If you're still with us, thank you for listening.
I hope I didn't scare you off too much with my heathen ways. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
And also, you're welcome, because this is honestly who we are, and that's all we want to be.
It's true.
And
thank you for letting us be ourselves.
Yeah. Share us with people, or contact us.
Yeah.
Interact with us.
Yep.
Like, comment, subscribe. Hug a Gideon.
Bye.
All two of us will hug a Gideon.
We will.
That's true. Bye.